matter what people say. Yeah. We got it going on. Yeah. Who cares about what they did?
You know me. I'm the hottest in this.
WJMS. This is According to RP.
Turn up the volume, kick back, and get raw with us.
From the latest hip-hop beats to social issues that cripple the black community, all from the perspective of a young, strong black woman.
A strong black woman.
And now your host, Rita.
Welcome back, everyone, for another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio, powered by Black Ivy Media. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And as always, I hope you guys are striving, thriving, and surviving in these corona-infested streets. Happy Women's History Month. I did not get the opportunity to tell you guys this last week because we were on a replay episode, but I'm so excited for this month because it gives us the opportunity to educate ourselves on the many, many, many accomplishments of women from the past and present. So at Black Ivy Media, we are featuring phenomenal black women on our social media platforms every single day for the entire month of March. So please follow us on IG at Black Ivy Media to learn about these amazing everyday women from our actual communities who are doing amazing things. While we're on the subject of Black Ivy Media, we are also having a very, very, very important panel discussion on Black maternal health on Tuesday, March 23rd at 7 p.m. It's going to be live streamed on our YouTube and Facebook page, so please be sure to follow us at Black Ivy Media on both YouTube and Facebook. We have an amazing panel put together of medical professionals, alternative medicine professionals, and people who were actually victims of the healthcare system. So you definitely want to keep it locked. It's a topic that we do not address, and black women are dying in pregnancy, dying during childbirth, and it must be put to an end. We have to make this a topic that's at the forefront, right? So again, be part of the change by being part of the conversation. Tune in Tuesday, March 23rd, 7 p.m., YouTube, Facebook, Black Ivy Media. So, yesterday marked the one-year anniversary of the death of Breonna Taylor. And when I say death, I really mean to say murder of Breonna Taylor. Just wanted to take a moment of silence to remember our queen, and we just hope that you all continue to remember her name. So today we have an amazing show with an amazing guest by the name of Nadege Fleurimon. Nadege is a serial, multi-passionate entrepreneur, and we are going to talk about the multi-passionate entrepreneur, right? And since it's Women's Month, we have this amazing woman who's going to talk about her journey as a woman tackling this world of entrepreneurialism, right? And there are so many things that I wanted to say now, but I want you guys to keep it locked. I want you guys to stay tuned because it is a very informative episode. It's a very educational episode. It's a very inspiring episode. And it's, I think, a very, you know, lighthearted, funny episode too. Nadege is a Sagittarian just like me, so we know how to keep it interesting. So you definitely want to keep it locked for that. But before we get into the meat of the show, it is now time for the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
The definition.
What does skeet skeet mean?
What's on fleek?
Can you use it in a sentence?
Popping on fleek, lit.
And it's gonna be lit.
Major key.
It's time for the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
So this week's Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week is la chancla. I swear. So this platform has certainly become multilingual, but Urban Dictionary never skips a beat. So the word is la chancla, a Spanish word meaning the flip-flop used by Latin moms to beat their child's ass. Example, Latin mom, do you not freaking listen, child? Latin child, oh damn, not la chancla. So there you go. Will we be using La Chancla in our households? I don't know. Especially those of us who are not native Spanish speakers. Not really sure if that's going to be a term that I will be using moving forward, but you never know. So you're welcome. So now we are on to our Haitian Creole word or phrase of the week. This week's Haitian Creole word or phrase of the week is levé. Levé. So levé means to get up or to wake up. So for those of you Haitians out there tuning in, you're probably triggered, right? It wasn't enough for our parents to just say levé, get up, but they had to do the levé, 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 levé in like the highest octave and in the loudest tone possible, right? So right now, as I'm saying this, I'm triggered. But the word is levé, meaning to wake up or to get up. So now we are on to the big up of the week.
Watch it. And you feel big up, big up. All of the woman them big up, big up. All of the girl them big up, big up. All of the woman them big up, big up.
So this week's big up of the week actually goes to all of you amazing women out there. It is Women's History Month, and we just want to take this time to shout you all out. Women are the backbone of society. We are the ones who literally run the world. And so I think that any opportunity to celebrate women, we are here for it. So the big up of to you goes to all of the women out there that are in the struggle, doing what they got to do, dealing with racism, dealing with sexual harassment, and still trying to make a dollar out of 15 cents so that our families, you know, can thrive. So big up to you ladies. So with every high, you guys know that there is a low. And this week's Womp Womp of the Week goes to none other than Sharon Osbourne, who is a panelist, or I guess a talk show host, on the talk show, The Talk. So Sharon is under scrutiny and is facing controversy in the Black community for her impassioned defense of Piers Morgan, who is a British journalist on Good Morning Britain. So to backtrack just a little bit, last week, Meghan Markle and Prince Harry did an exclusive interview with Oprah Winfrey that took the world by storm. Most of you watched it. And for those of you who didn't watch it, you saw all the memes on social media. So you guys got an update as to what was going on. Essentially, in this interview, Meghan Markle came out and gave her side of the story as to her treatment by the royals, right? She talked about experiencing racism. She talked about how the royals were trying to, I guess, determine what color or what skin tone this baby, this unborn baby, would be. She talked about the baby not getting a title, all this other stuff. She talked about, you know, the stress that she was under and how it even brought her to thoughts of suicide. Serious stuff, right? So apparently this British journalist by the name of Piers Morgan decided that he was going to comment. And you know what? That's a journalist's job to comment on these things. However, many thought that he went a little too far. And even one of his co-hosts thought that he went a little too far. He went on to say that that he did not believe Meghan Markle, and that Meghan, was essentially lying about the racism, saying that if you can't call these people out by name, then, you know, I guess it doesn't really exist. And that if this really did happen, you know, how come she's not naming any names? All this other stuff. I think he even went as far as to say that he didn't believe her suicide attempt. Again, crazy stuff. So the weatherman on the show, Alex Beresford, who is biracial, pressed him, in a sense, pressed Pierce Morgan and really questioned him as to why he keeps trashing her and why he's going off on, you know, saying what it is that he's saying. I actually saw that clip and I don't remember exactly 100% what was said, but he wasn't just really coming to the defense of Meghan Markle, in my opinion. He was really speaking, calling him out on his racism. And the thing is that people think that you have to say a racist word for it to be racist. Like, racism is covert, it's overt, it's implied. You don't have to say or call somebody the N-word for racism not to be present in, you know, your speech or whatever the case is. Either way, Piers Morgan was like, I'm not having this. He, you know, in his white privilege was like, this is too much for me, and stormed off of the show. And that storming off of the show was like the bell that rang around the world. So people, you know, all these media outlets have been commenting on it and whatnot. Either way, to the present point, Sharon Osbourne was adamant, and she was so vehemently, I guess, I don't know, defending this man. And so this conversation about Pierce Morgan on The Talk ended up in a heated discussion between Cheryl Underwood, who is a co-host of Cheryl Osbourne on The Talk. And I think what was really, really crazy about this whole exchange was that Sharon literally was, you know, telling Cheryl to define racism. Like, what was racist about what Piers Morgan said, what he did, and really sitting there like pressing her, like, tell me what was racist, define racism, and going off. And I think that, you know, it was just, you know, Cheryl Underwood kept her composure. She was very professional. I don't even know if she should have been professional in that moment, because it was really quite absurd just watching the exchange. But, you know, either way, Sharon decided that she was going to do what everybody does when they act in a way that's inappropriate, is apologize. So she's on an apology tour now, and I'm going to read just a little bit from her tweet apology, right? Because it was just like, whatever. She said, after some reflection, after sitting with your comment and sitting with my heart, I would like to address the discussion on The Talk this past Wednesday. I have always been embraced with much love and support from the Black community. I don't know what community she's talking about, but whatever. And have deep respect and love for the Black community. To anyone of color that I offended, and or to anyone that feels confused or let down by what I said, I am truly sorry. I panicked, felt blindsided, got defensive, and allowed my fears and horror of being accused of being a racist to take over. Now, I don't really know that Cheryl accused her of being racist. I think she really was trying to get to the meat of, sis, why are you defending homeboy so vehemently? Like, do you not see what he said and what he did? But again, this is just what white people do. Those white people who, when accused or feel like they're being accused of racism, or when the R word peers its head, this is how they act. All of a sudden it's blindsided. All of a sudden I panicked. Ma'am, you're a talk show host. You've been doing this for so long. Like, you were not blindsided. This is probably not the first time race has been a topic on your show or in your life. You know what you did. I would have preferred her saying, you know what? I agree with what Morgan did, right? Because, and she could have spinned it to say, like, as a journalist, he has the right, or he has the ability to cast his opinions. And if you don't like it, that's you. I don't believe that it was racist. I believe he just doesn't like Meghan Markle. I don't know. He probably would have thought that she's full of shit. I don't know. I feel like that's really where she should have went with it. But this whole situation of her really going back and forth and really, I mean, I felt like I felt offended by watching this interaction. Like, she was really like pressing Cheryl Underwood. And I was just like, this is crazy. So she gets the womp womp of the week. And, you know, I am of the opinion, for the most part, that we as Black people should not have to really educate white people as to what is racist in these kinds of settings. I do believe that there are white people, especially those who are not used to black people, who were not raised around black people, who are from all these, you know, these fully white towns. Sometimes you do have to let them know and you have to put them in check, right? Because if they've never engaged with black people before, like some of these microaggressions and things, they might not necessarily know like that is racist or offensive, right? But Cheryl, not, I keep saying Cheryl, Sharon, this S&S business, Sharon, I don't believe is part of that class. You know, she has black co-hosts. She's in this world. Her husband was in the music, you know, industry. Like, she doesn't have that same luxury, in a sense, to say, to claim that, oh my God, I did not know, I don't see color. No. So I think that for her, this was definitely a big womp womp. And I mean, are we canceling her? I don't know. I don't think I was ever for her, really. I was never necessarily a fan of her. I didn't like her. I didn't hate her. But, you know, and then there are many people who are kind of questioning Cheryl, saying, Cheryl, sis, you should have pressed her a little harder. Like, I don't think that you did the black community justice. But that's another conversation for another day. Either way, Sharon Osbourne, you are the womp womp of the week. I don't really know what, you know, you do moving forward. I mean, you posted an apology. I guess people will accept it and we will move on as if nothing happened. But I think that this definitely raises more questions as to how should the media, like journalists especially, respond to these, I don't know, to these scenarios, in a sense. Like, meaning Piers Morgan, he has his thoughts on Meghan Markle. He has his thoughts on, I don't know, black people or people of color. As a journalist, is it ever okay for him to express himself in the way that he did? I don't know, right? People like to hide behind journalism as a way to also be racist. So I don't know. Either way, she's the womp womp of the week. Let's move on to something more positive. We are now moving on to the meat of the show. All right, everyone, I'm here with my very special guest, Nadege Fleury-Mond. Nadege, please say hello.
Hello, hello, hello. I like that very special part. Thank you.
I mean, my guests are very special people, and I want them to know, and I want the world to know it, you know?
I know now. Thank you very much, Nita. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. You know, and it's been like, I don't know, in the making, right? We keep talking about getting you on the show and then it never happens, but we're trying to be intentional in 2021.
There you go. There you go. We're doing it.
So Nadege, I know there are a lot of people out there who do know who you are, but for those that do not, please let us know who you are, where you're from, and what you do.
Hello, everyone. Again, my name is Nadege Fleury-Mond, and I am a perpetual entrepreneur, multi-passionate entrepreneur here in Brooklyn, New York. I was born in Haiti, came here when I was 7. So I was raised in Brooklyn. The only time I left Brooklyn was when I went to school in Manhattan for 4 years, and then I came right back because I just love me Brooklyn. So yeah, I run a catering business. I've run a catering business for the last 18 years, which I started while a junior at school. And it just kind of flourished from there. That's what most people know me from, is through the food space. I've written 3 books about food. I love incorporating food and culture and people and thoughts and feelings. So most of my cookbooks are about like food, but a little more. Mm-hmm. And then I also run a real estate practice here with my partner, Cindy Peters, where we help our community with purchases and sales, but our real passion also is investing in real estate, and we flip houses, but we really want to get the community involved and understand the value of home ownership, right? So we do a lot of education around home ownership. And then my third main business is I run an entrepreneurship coaching practice. I help creative entrepreneurs like myself to turn their passion-based businesses into profit, because I've been blessed in the sense that I've been able to make a living out of the things that I love. And I want others to understand, because I think oftentimes society, our families, our friends try to push us in the other direction. But I'm a strong believer, if we're going to make a living anyways, there's nothing wrong with a 9-to-5. Mm-hmm. I love me the 9-to-5. That's what your calling is. Because also, not everyone's meant to be an entrepreneur. But if you do have the desire to be an entrepreneur and you have something you're passionate about, I am that cheerleader that's going to tell you it is possible, because I've lived it, but not just cheer you on, but I also help you develop the systems and strategies needed to turn that passion to profit. Because sometimes you just want to be a singer and it's a hobby and it's not something you want to monetize, and that's also okay. So I help individuals that's ready to go over that hump. It's like, nah, I'm good at this, but I'd like to make some money with it too.
Okay. I heard a lot of different things. I heard chef. I heard real estate guru. I heard life coach. I heard so many different things. So
we didn't even mention the e-commerce store.
And then there's, let's talk about it. There's the IPAV line. I love the IPAV line.
Because again, I'm a true believer. Like, the things that I love, for me, they become seamless, right? So they become seamless in terms of incorporating them into my lifestyle. So that's why I label myself a lifestyle entrepreneur, because it's like the things that are important to me, I realize other people want to know about them too. And then it touches people in some kind of way. So I always call myself a professional IPAV. IPAV is like a Haitian Creole slang word that loosely translates to bum. But I just remember, as a kid, right, our parents would be like, whenever we did something they didn't deem of value, it's like, you're such an IPAV. Look at you going to hang out with your friends. Look at you going to the club. So in my older years as an entrepreneur, I'd be traveling and people would be like, where are you now? Mm-hmm. I'm like, you know, I'm a professional IPAV. I'm in Barcelona. Why are you at the gym at noon? I'm a professional. So it becomes synonymous with living life on your terms. That's what it translates to me. And that's what I try to put out there. So my whole store is based on like these cute sayings, but also kind of like it's where I put all the products and things that I create. Because I am a creative and I need to get it out. And I've accepted that a long time ago. But it's putting it out in a structured way as well. Because I think multi-passionates, sometimes you can come across as scattered.
Yeah, all over the place.
Mm-hmm. All over the place. And so for that, I don't like that, because I'm very serious about everything I take on. Not only I'm serious about it because it's things that I love, but it's also, I really do want to monetize them, right? So for me to monetize them, I need structure.
You're about that money.
I'm about that money, right? Because I'm trying to be on a beach somewhere and retire, right?
Yeah.
No, the beach is hot. I don't like the beach. And the one person, I'm like, why don't we go to the beach? It's hot. The sun is just beating down on you.
I love the beach, but I like the water aspect of it. I like the water.
I like water. I'm an adventure traveler. But yeah, so for me, it was like, okay, so I created the store as always. Like I create food products. I have my books. I needed a place to host them. I created a beautiful apron line inspired from my food, inspired by Haiti. I wanted a place to host that, the t-shirts. So the store is kind of like the physical manifestations of the things that I love. And if somebody wants to connect to those things and have them in their homes, they can. So those are the businesses.
The businesses.
And none of them are side hustles.
Well, you know what? And it's a great thing to actually like point out, because a lot of people, you know, they would be like, oh yeah, all these, like they call their businesses side hustles, and they're kind of, I feel like you're diminishing from what it is when you're like, oh, this is just a side hustle, when it's a whole business.
It can be a side hustle, but I think the level of seriousness you put on it determines how you view it. And I think saying side hustle, it's not, there's nothing wrong with that, because it's just an understanding that, you know what, this is not my priority. To me, that's what side hustle means, right? For me, that's, I'm not saying that's what it is. It's important, but it's not a priority. Given the choice, I wouldn't be doing this, I would be doing this other thing.
Yeah.
So for me, when I say my businesses, they all have to exist. You know, it's not like something like I can let go of, because they all have a place and have different roles.
So I feel like, you know, the more I speak to you, I always find that defining terms matters, because as you went into that explanation, I'm like, but I know a lot of people who are calling their businesses side hustles because they're not understanding what you just said, like the priority aspect of it, right? Because I find a lot of people are pouring so much energy, so much money, so much time, and they're treating it seriously. But I think when you tell somebody else, oh, this is a side hustle, it's like, okay, what is resonating in that other person's mind? And are people taking you seriously on the outside? So,
yeah. And that's a good point, because I think the terms you use, right? It's kind of like they say, how you show up also tell people how to treat you, right? So I think, defining it. Again, like I said, I don't even think there's anything wrong with the term side hustle, but I think it also lets you know. It's kind of like dating, seeing somebody.
Talking.
We're talking, right? I don't know what any
of them
mean.
I'm notorious for the talking.
I'm a grumble. I don't even know what that is, right? When they are, right? So, but each one resonates or says something different, right? To people who understand the terms.
Yeah.
So I think for me, even if it's something that you put in 10 hours, it doesn't mean you spend your full time in it. A side hustle could be 10 hours, but those 10 hours could be making you, like, there were times, like, during the pandemic when my store was making me over $10,000 a month. I'm not calling that a side hustle. No. You know what I'm saying?
That's real money. Cash money.
That's real money. Like, that's like, oh, that's a whole business, right? So maybe for people, the defining factor may be a monetary amount. Maybe for some others, it's time. You know, so I think for me, the determining factor is, how serious do I take it? Priority is what I base, whether it's a hustle or if it's something, you know, if it's a whole business. So to the extent that I give it priority and I know 10 hours a week, 5 hours a week, whatever it is, I'm dedicated to making these things happen, then it's my only side hustle, maybe like my Instagram live, right? Because if we're like, we can't make it happen, it's like, I'll fell out swimming, you know, we'll do it next week. That would consider a side hustle, but it brings me no money. So as soon as I monetize it, trust me, it's a whole business.
Listen, we all can stand to learn a little from Nadesh Lorimont, because she literally monetizes everything. And I think that it's really important, especially for women, because a lot of times we are, you know, we have these tools at our disposal, we have these talents, but we allow others, or maybe we don't allow others, it could just be our actual mindset at somebody who does different things that quote unquote don't coincide, or at least, you know, objectively coincide. You're somebody who's scatterbrained, you're all over the place, you're a jack of all trades, master of none. I like to tell people I'm a jack of all trades, master of some, because, you know, there are some things that I'm, you know, whatever. And then there are other things, there are many things that I'm good at, and I'm not going to, you know, back down from that. So yes. I like the fact that, you know, you are this, you know, I guess this representative of how you can make everything work, or at least make the things that you want to work, work.
Yeah. And it's important because, like I said, you don't just get there overnight either. Because I think it's a process, right? There's two things you mentioned. I think as women, there is this, we've been socialized that money, like, we shouldn't be so money driven, right? We should do things because we like it. It's nice or whatever. And that's cool. And I'm a believer in that because I am very passion focused, right? That's why I had to leave my day job, because to the extent that I'm not passionate about it, it's not happening for me, right? So I need that driving force. But at the same time, I need to pay my bills. I have goals of things that I want in this life, you know? So I'm a woman of a certain age. It's too late to get a sugar daddy. So listen, I gotta work.
Listen, it's never too late, sister. I've been watching Instagram. I've been watching. It is never too late. If you're passionate about the sugar daddy.
But my knees are not as good as they used to be. So I don't know.
Nothing a little masquerity won't hurt, right?
Gastro oil. So knowing these things, I understand they can coexist. I can be passion focused, passion driven, community driven, and still want to get paid. You know, so you'll always hear somebody say, perhaps you'll be like, oh, Nadel, she don't play. She's all about her business. But that also exists with in the same vein as, oh my God, Nadesh, you can call on her for anything. She can give, she'll give. She has time, she'll donate, she'll give money. They all can coexist. And I don't think like us as women have to choose wanting a great lifestyle, wanting to make money with like being money hungry and not caring about other things. The other aspect in terms of being scatterbrained is this, like at the end of the day, some of us are, right? We can be, and I've been there, because it took me a long time to come to terms that I was not just a chef. I did not want to be. As much as so many people saw me in that light, and it's like, oh my God, you're a great caterer, and this is all my friends saw for me. And I'm like, it's not fulfilling my soul, because I'm also passion driven. Mm-hmm. I knew that my impact was more than just here's a nice plate of food, mon bel plat manger, and it tastes good. I knew that. I knew that my impact was in impacting people to live their dreams. Mm-hmm. I knew that and understood that, but I didn't really know what that meant, right? I didn't know coaching existed at the time. It's just that I've always been that person that everybody reaches out to, like Nadej, like she's either going to cheer you on, push you over the edge, or beat you over the head, but she's going to motivate you. So I didn't know how exactly I was going to play that out. But having that anchor in something really makes it easier to do other things. Mm-hmm. The anchor could be one in the learning structure. My catering business showed me a lot in terms of entrepreneurship and business development as a whole, right? I learned networking through that business. I learned budgeting. I learned so much marketing. All of that because I went through the recession. When I first started catering, I was mainly corporate. And then 2008, 2009 hit, and I was like, oh my God, these corporations don't even want milk and cookies. They like, yo, just budget. No. But then, no, that's it. Actually, never mind. We'll get it from the tap. Like, so you have to reinvent, you know. So I learned how to always innovate and create through that business, right? So having that anchor and foundation in building something and building something great also helped me now be able to establish other things. So I think oftentimes for multi-passionates like myself, we're trying to build 5 empires at the same time. Mm-hmm. And that can be problematic both within in terms of our own mental health, in terms of our time, in terms of everything, and then just in terms of you being able to give your all. But once you have built one empire, it makes it easier because you've already met people along the way that you know who to call to make that flyer happen in 2 seconds, mm-hmm. instead of you going through Fiverr and running through 77 people that suck. Yep. And then now you're 2 weeks behind, right? So you've already learned how to manage your time. Because again, initially you think entrepreneurship, I can do what I want, when I want, how I want. So you learn those systems through sometimes having that anchor. So I tell people, and then also too, that money, right? Yeah. It's hard to start businesses when you don't have money. As much as, yes, I started my catering business out of my dorm suite. I was at Columbia. I was studying political science. At that time, it was a side hustle because I was just making money that I didn't anticipate to make. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I was within an environment that provided me the shelter where I didn't need so much money capital to start because I wasn't trying to start big. I just was like, you know, catering for my friends. My friends were running the Black Student Association. They were hiring me. You know, like I had that built-in network. So once I started building my business, even when I left my job, because I worked for Congresswoman Yvette Clark, who was in the city council at the time, because I was in politics. I was like, I'm going to be a lawyer. Mm-hmm. Let me go work in government, which was a great move, by the way, because so many of my clients came out of that field. And then I just wasn't, you know, I was like, damn, I can't do both, right? Because government takes so much of your time, evenings and everything like that. And I was like, I want to cater on the weekends. I don't care if I'm attending a $200 per person gala for free. If I want to be doing something else, it's a burden. That's why people always say, oh, I wish I could, like, I wanted to be an influencer, right? And I was like, oh my God, these people take beautiful pictures and they're getting free stuff and free money. I do that stuff and I'm like, this is work. I don't like it. So to the extent you're doing something you don't like, it's work, right? Yeah. So I was just like, this is a great field, but I don't get to do what I want to do. So eventually I left and I only left with like $980 in my bank account, but I was 22, you know, no kids, no nothing. So I wanted less then. I wouldn't do that now. And I'm like, wait, how am I going to take a trip? How am I going to invest in the stock market? You know, like, you're thinking of all these adult things, but it was a blessing that I did it that early because you have more courage when you're young, right? You don't have the burdens of life. But doing that, it was easier to build because, one, the type of business, right? I didn't have a restaurant. I had a catering company where as money came, I could use it to build, right? I wasn't spending money to build the business. It was more like you make money as you're getting paid. So it's easier, but there's other businesses that I wanted to do. I needed the money. So having have the structure of that initial anchor of something that brings you money, that has foundation, then you can build something else in easier. And that's another way of being less scattered. And also to, you're not like trying to make five things work with no money when you can have that one that's feeding your other passions. My love, Pilou, sorry, Rita.
I mean, listen, this is what, I mean, it's a show, right? We're supposed to talk. So now your approach to business, I think your approach to life is a little different from what most, how most women would view life, business, and things like that, right? I don't want to say that, you know, a lot of women are less confident, but I think that I wouldn't be wrong to say that, right? And there's reasons for that. It's not saying that, it's not like we can't become confident, but there are a lot of barriers, a lot of obstacles, and a lot of that stems from childhood, right? We're Black women living in America, you know, racism. There's so many things that kind of eat and tick at our self-esteem from young. So I guess where did your courage and confidence stem from? How did you become this mogul, Nadege Frelimon? Like, where'd that spirit come from?
That's a great question, because it's funny, because not only are we dealing with issues of racism, we're dealing with patriarchy, right? But in a sense, it's patriarchy, I guess, that has made me the way I am. Because in a sense that I mentioned this a lot, my dad, right? I was raised by a single father. And as crazy and as hard as that was, because he is very strict, he's very old school Haitian, he's very difficult. But there's a lot of good things that came out of that, because there's a courage that I think men have, right? It's just like we could talk about white privilege. But there's also male privilege, right? Whatever race you may be, right? Because no matter almost wherever you go in the world, for the most part, right, men are usually the ones in control. So I think I benefited from that in a way, because my dad was always like that person, like, what's up? Like, I remember we went to a grocery store. I just came from Haiti. I was like 7, almost 8 years old. And then I saw a police officer and I kind of like hid behind him. The police officer came into the store. Because you're from Haiti. You're like, you don't play with authority. So what's wrong with you? You know, you do know he works for you, right? Wow. You know, like, you do know, like, police officers work for you. Like, he was explaining all these things. So I was like, there's a confidence that men have that, you know, I always like the meme where the woman walks by the mirror and she's gorgeous, but she's like, oh my God, look at the bags under my eyes. My stomach is so big. I look like this and all of these things. The guy, Miguel, his stomach is out to here. When he looks in the mirror, though, he sees Adonis.
Isn't that ironic?
But it's really true, right? Because no matter what a man looks like, there's a confidence. He has this thing like, yo, I got this, right? So part of it is my dad, because I think males just generally have that, and he basically implanted in me. The other part is, I think I accepted long time ago, and this came a lot from reading, and I attribute this to Maya Angelou a lot, because I read her books when I was an avid reader. I wouldn't read nothing because I don't have the attention. But I was an avid reader because I had no friends. I was growing up, right? It was just me. So I remember reading I Know How to Catch Birds Sing. I was like 9, 10 years old, and I'm reading these very adult books. But I think I accept accepted long time ago that you don't have to be the best. And not being the best doesn't mean you're not great. If that makes sense.
Say that again, please. Say that again, please. Because it's resonating with me, you know, growing up in Haitian household where excellence is the only marker. Yes. I think a lot of us suffered from that. So please say that again. Say that again.
I had that too. So I had to fight that with my dad. It's like, 98, what happened to the other two?
I was kicked. I almost got kicked out of my house in third grade for getting a bad grade in math because I'm not a math person. She legit.
Third grade.
I will never forget it. She legitimately and literally told me that you will not live here anymore if you come back in this house with these grades for math. So I'm triggered.
I understand. But I think Maya Angelou, in her writing, there's a vulnerability that she exudes, but it also was a strength in it as well. So I accepted at a very early age that fucking up is okay, you know, not being the best is okay, not being the tallest is okay, not being the prettiest is okay, not being the this, whatever society has deemed as whatever the ultimate should be, even if you're not that, it's okay, because what it's kind of like you, when they say you're the secret sauce, like whatever combination you have, it's perfectly okay for whatever it is you want to do.
Yeah.
You know? So I think I built myself up with these kind of like beliefs at an earlier age, unknowingly, you know, that they later paid off, because I tell people that through entrepreneurship, you're going to mess up. Like, it's just something that happened. But I was never defined by my failures, you know? And I think a lot of times women were just like, oh my God, it went wrong. It's like the marriage didn't work out. Oh my God, I'm no good. As opposed to, no, this was no good. This was not a right situation. And maybe it was a wrong choice on your part, but it's a part. It's not the whole, you know? So I think we have to really get in the habit of understanding, like, life is indeed a journey, right? And then there are going to be different encounters and different points. Sometimes, you know, you're going to, it's kind of like the baby, right? They're walking, they keep trying to get up to walk, but they fall. But I think us as adults, we kind of like forget that. We kind of like let go of that spirit as we get older. Like, we let those failures define us and weigh us down. And then in a sense, we end up not trying.
Yeah. I think that that's really important what you said, because I feel like even with myself, you know, I have off and on periods, right? That happens. And I tell people that, you know, it is okay as long as you recognize that this is negativity happening right now, and that, you know, give yourself a day to sit in it maybe and then move forward, because it happens. Then you do that, right? You say things like, well, it's my fault. Like, I had a project that I was working on with others and people were falling off, and I'm like, is it because they don't think I'm important? And I'm like, you know, to even have that conversation, it's like, what am I doing? You know? So I think it's really important, particularly for women, not to that men don't have these issues, they don't have these same conversations, but I think that it's really important that women understand, because I think we're usually we're easier to come to those negative conclusions and be in those negative spaces. And allow others' opinions to, you know, to define us. So I think that part's really important. I think that's...
You're right. And I think we do, as much as we don't, it's sad, but it is true, because again, most societies, most cultures, as a woman, you're brought up to please. You're brought up to please your parents. You're brought up to please your dad. You're brought up to please your brothers. You're brought up to please strangers. Your man.
Strangers that you don't know.
Everybody, right? Exactly. Because it's kind of like, oh my God, look what they said about you, right? What is the neighbor's... So it's like we are always like on. It's always kind of like, oh, we have to be on, as opposed to like men get to be, you know?
Mediocre. They get to be whatever they want.
They're going to apply for that job. They're like, oh, I don't qualify. Let me apply.
I don't even have a degree. And it said master's. I don't have an associate.
What? It may be my day. And you know what? Sometimes it is.
Yeah.
But we don't even allow ourselves that grace and that opportunity to even go for it a lot of time. But I think through these conversations, and like you said, when you hear others and then you understand like, oh, wow, this kind of self-talk happens among a lot of people, then you can kind of like halt yourself and say, this is what's happening right now. Like you said, sometimes you're like, oh, but I'm processing this. Why am I even having this conversation with myself? What's really at play here?
Yeah.
And I think that's a big part of it.
So in your coaching business, right? Because I want to talk about that a little bit before, you know, we end. What do you find to be the biggest challenge in coaching, particularly women, right? Because we want to talk about women
mostly
today.
Women, yeah.
Mostly and women, right? So what are some of your biggest challenges in coaching women?
Well, like you said, I think we just had the whole conversation about it. With women, it's really this belief like, are people going to like it?
Mm.
Are people going to like me? Am I really that great? Right? I've coached, like I said, this is before I even started coaching. I realized I was always that first person to believe in people, or at least to tell people. Maybe others believed in them. But I was like, but you got this. You're a great stylist. You know, you got this. You're a great whatever it is, clothing designer. You're a great, like, earring maker. Like, I always believed in people. But it seems like, and I know, and I tell people that. Most of my people I know, they're so talented. I was like, if I had half your talent,
you'd be Oprah.
Because I see some greatness in these people, yet you see them doubting themselves. So doubt is the biggest thing most women, business owners, I see that they face, because it's kind of like they're always wondering, like, are people going to receive the product? Mm-hmm. Are people going to like the jacket they created? Are people going to like the app that they're thinking about? And I'm like, these are brilliant ideas and brilliant concepts, but there is always not even a how, because funny enough, I feel like when a woman makes a decision, she figures out the how,
mm-hmm.
but it's even getting to that point where even believing it's possible. And it always comes with self-doubt. It's the self-doubt that stops a lot of them. And again, it's all questioning, what will people say? What if they mess up? Because once you are in business, you do become public, you know, a property, right? Mm-hmm. So people are going to say what they want to say, and you are going to mess up. And don't let nobody tell you not. Like, you are, you know? But it's what you do with it, right? As cliche as it is, as it sounds, is, are you failing forward? Like, what are you learning? How are you growing? How are you developing? Like, when I look, like, I used to do cooking classes, and I saw the little aprons I used to use, these plastic white aprons. I was like, ooh, what I learned. You know, like, it's so ugly. Like, why would I do that in a cooking class, right? And then I was like, oh, and then I looked 5 years later, they had little green aprons, and now I'm like, wow, I have a whole apron line, right?
Mm.
How are you learning and growing through it? But I think we're so focused on not being quite there, thinking that you have to start already having everything figured out. And I'm telling you, I think it's a book. I never read it, but I like the title. I think it's like Fire Aim or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's like you fire. And I'm a believer in that, because the real growth and the real learning is in the doing.
Yeah.
You have to do it. How are you going to know what reader likes, you know, if you don't create the locks?
Exactly. Listen, know, like, I might stick with this. I might stick with this.
So for you to know, like, it looks really good.
Thank you.
You know, but you need to do it though, so she can go under this, your post, and tell you what she loves about it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to create it to know, like, oh wow, I can't ship this 3-day shipping because it's gonna rot in the mail. I have to do one day. You have to do it. It's only in doing, because you can have a beautiful concept all you want, but until you do it, for you to really live through it, and any big multi-billion-dollar business will tell you that you have to, the product testing has to happen on the real market. So you just have to start. So the first thing I always, like, when I coach, I'm always like, we need a date. Like, I always make people put dates on stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because we also get, like, you know, what is that paralysis is called? It's not coming to me. You know what I'm talking about,
yes,
right?
Yes.
But a lot of people say, oh, I'm a perfectionist. I like things to be great. Mm-hmm. But you're just using that as an excuse to procrastinate because you're fearful a lot of times, you know? So then I'm usually like, oh, okay, yeah, you want to start the podcast? What would it take to whatever? Da-da-da-da. We talked briefly about it. I was like, okay, so June 18th? Does that work? Oh, no, that's too soon. Oh, why is it too soon? Well, I need 2 weeks. So we make a timeline. Because we get overwhelmed by the mountain, not realizing it's one little step at a time. So I always get my clients to break it down, chunk it down. And by giving them a date, they have to be honest with themselves in terms of, what does it really take to bring this to fruition? What's stopping me? Who are the people that I need? What are the things that I need to get in place? And it's really that. I tell people, coaching it's simple. It's hard at the same time, right? Because it's a lot of accountability and a lot of honesty with yourself. I don't have a magic wand and I can't make people do what they don't want to do, you know? But what I am here to do is to push you to actually address, you know, some of the things, excuses that you may be using, and then also provide you some of the resources that I've learned along the way, right? Of what works and what hasn't worked. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I, you know, now I'm like thinking, I'm like, paralysis, like, what is it?
Yeah, what's that word?
There's a word for it, but
there's there's a word before the paralysis part. We'll figure it out as soon as the show ends.
Yeah, and I'm gonna be like, Nadesh, I got it.
Somebody's gonna post it under the thing as we're talking. So as you end the show.
Oh, man, Nadesh, I'm just, you know, there's so many gems that, you know, the gem dropping, I like using that term, gems that were dropped during this call, because I find that, again, you know, and this is information that anybody can benefit from, but, you know, I like to, you know, focus on the sisters at times, because I see just being around women, being a woman myself, that there is a lacking. And we need to figure it out in order for us to really like succeed the way that we want to succeed, right? So I really, you know, I've known you for a long time and I can't remember when I first met you, but I know that I've
was at Fordham? Was it at Fordham when I catered that event?
It was way before that. Cause you know, I've been part of that the hack network forever. So it was, but I don't think we ever like really like spoke, but I always knew who you were. And so I've seen you from like, you know, back when you were like catering, like just catering to like now. And I'm like, she has all these businesses and everything is still seamless. Like nobody is saying, ah, she's all over the place. What's going on here? And even if they are, then you're like, this person might be a hater, you know, like, there's a reason, you know what I mean? So I think that, you know, and just being in different rooms with you, like just seeing how women, you know, when they're like, Nadesh is in the room. We were in a clubhouse the other day and we had a man that was just like, if Nadesh is here, I gotta be here. And he brought his whole tribe into the clubhouse room. I was like, what power does this woman have? So so I really appreciate you even taking the time and doing this show, but then also really teaching women how to not just, you know, turn their passion into profits, but just teaching them that it's possible to really do whatever it is that you want to do and to have this unapologetic, you know, sense of yourself, I think is what's important. So, you know, thank you for providing these
platforms. That's important. Like, you can do it. And if it doesn't work, it's okay. Yeah. Like you said, like, you don't have to be great at everything. But at the end of the day, you won't know until you try. It really is that simple. So it's okay that, oh, you wanted to do this and it didn't work out. Go start something else.
Yeah.
And that's why I said, and I learned not to care what people think a long time ago. Because, again, you're living this life for you and on your own, like I said, your own accord in a way, right? Like the same people talking, most of the people talking are not even people you can approach and go ask for help. So why would you even care?
They're not even doing. Their job is to comment. That is their job. And then I get paid for it.
That is true. So you just really have to focus. And this is going back to women. I do believe in having a strong support system. It is very important. Like I always tell people, if a woman, I'm a big believer in that. I think there's no better people to have around you than other women and powerful women. I say, yeah, I'm an alpha female, but I'm surrounded by other alpha females. It's not like, and being an alpha female doesn't mean that you're trying to rule, you're trying to be the leader. It just means that you get shit done. But it also means that you are about empowering people. Alphas empower others. So it's not a competition thing. You're not worried about Rita's doing her stuff because you're just like, yeah, I'm doing my stuff. You want her to do her stuff because that's the kind of energy you want around you. So I'm very big on ensuring that you surround yourself with other amazing people that are doing amazing things, or at least want to do amazing things. I always tell people, I don't mind if I meet a man and he don't got like the $1 million, but what's the plan, right? What's the plan? Like, you have to have ambition. Show me a blueprint. Show me something. So for me, ambition is like probably the sexiest trait that I find. And I get into arguments with my women friends. I'm like, what you doing? Like, what's next? You know, I learned not to nag people as much, but my main thing is if somebody is around you and they say they want something, I'm going to be that person. Oh, you said you wanted this. Like, what's happening with it? Yeah. And you want that people around you, because I'll have those people. As much as I'm very motivated, but sometimes I slack, right? So I need that person who's like, but Nadej, you said you were going to work on this. What's happening? I'll give you an example. One of my biggest projects, and it's been years in the making, is a kitchen project. And maybe that's the thing that overwhelms me, because maybe I'm a little scared. I don't even know, because it's such a big commitment, because I'm a Sagittarius. You know, we have commitment issues.
Yes, yes, we do. But we're great people, though. Amazing people with commitment issues.
Yes, 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 yes. Oh, my God. I was in a clubhouse room. They're like, oh, my God, a Sagittarius, you're toxic. I was like, how are we toxic?
I saw the same thing on a thread. I'm like, we are not toxic people.
I was like, well, you know, I was like, the only thing you will say about a Sagittarius is that we may have a little commitment issues, but only if you don't fit the criteria, right?
Exactly. You got to fit the mold. You got to fit
the
mold.
And he was like, oh, you don't think that's toxic? I was like, ooh, who hurt you, boo? You need to heal.
And we tell the truth, too. Like, we're honest. It's sometimes not the best way, but we're telling you the truth.
We're very undiplomatically honest.
I'm not diplomatic at all. I have to work at being diplomatic.
But it's good when you have people around you, because I have a couple of friends, my friend Nancy, my friend Gracie. They're always like, so what's up with the kitchen? Like, I thought you were working. And I was like, well, the space that I was going to use, it didn't work. So that the only place in Brooklyn? What's up? Like, what, you know, like they keep pushing me. And I'm like, you want that. So now, because they're like here in my ears every couple of months, every month, they're checking up on it. It's, I make it a priority. And I'm reminded again that, wow, and as you said, this was important to you. Has something changed? So what's stopping you? What's the roadblock? So you need people in your life that's going to push you forward. And not only sometimes people in your life that's going to push you forward, we do have self-doubt. We do have limiting beliefs. So sometimes you need people to see you even greater than you see yourself, right? Yeah. You don't want people that's going to be like, Rita, since I always want to do something big. You don't need that kind of energy. You need the person that's like, but Rita, I know you're doing this, but why aren't you doing that? Like, because you're great. You're amazing. You could go here. And you're like, I didn't think I could do that. And then they're like, yeah, you could, because you've done this, you've done that. You need those kind of people, because sometimes it is through that person's vision, you're able to see yourself greater. And you start to believe.
Yeah.
So that's why sometimes when you don't have the little courage yourself, you need the zummies and the friends that's going to be like, no, no, come on, you could do it.
Yeah.
You got this. And it helps.
Yeah, no, it definitely helps. I have several people in my life that are, you know, up in the chat groups are just like, you're amazing. And it's like, I am, aren't I? So now let me be amazing.
Exactly. Because you're like, they believe in me so much. Let me go and be.
Yeah. Let me not let them down.
Yes. And sometimes it is about that. And that's okay. Whatever is going to be something that moves you forward.
Yeah. Oh man, I feel like we can go on forever and ever. So we are going to have we're going to have a part two. We're definitely going to have a part two to
I'm
this.
I'm definitely open to that. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course.
Like you said, the time went by so fast. I know. We were having a conversation in our living room. Well, I am in my living room.
Listen, this pandemic has redefined and reshaped how we do, you know, interviews now. But I want to give you this opportunity, though, to shout out your businesses. How can people contact you? You know, where can they get the coaching? Where can they get the book, the apron, the hip-hop t-shirt, real estate, all of it?
Yes, buy houses with me, sell your house with me. I just got a great listing, so I'm super happy about that in Crown Heights. But yeah, no, everything is on my Instagram. Instagram is mainly where I live, Nadej Fleurimont, as my name is written. You can find me, because through my personal branding page, you can see everything else that I do. And I'm a believer in that. I'm like, my brand is an umbrella of everything else, because who I stand for and who I am is that same person in all my businesses, whether it's coaching, whether it's catering, whether it's, you know, real estate. So you're going to get that. So you can definitely follow me on Instagram. And, you know, I just, my book, Taste of Solitude, is back in stock. It's a book that I wrote during the pandemic. It's called Taste of Solitude, a Culinary Journal. So it's on both Amazon as well as my website, Warrior Shop, which is RoarIorShop.com. So you can see all my wonderful things via those two platforms. So thank you so much, Rita, for having me. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, sister. All right. So thank you, everyone, for tuning into another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio, powered by Black Ivy Media. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And as always, I'll talk to you guys next week.
You were listening to According to RP on WJMS Radio.
About time you tuned in.
Tune in each and every Sunday.
I can't wait to come back.
7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
It's all on.